On show 476, Tesla's insurance plan, the Chevy Bolt EUV, and lots of your answers to question of the week. Those stories, and a few more actually, not too much news, mostly your part of the show on show 476. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It is Sunday, 19th of May today. My name is Martin Lee, and welcome to the show. I go through all the stories that I can find each day. Normally the shows are packed with news. On a Sunday, though, we like to read out your answers to question of the week, and of course give a big name check to all our exec producers and above from our Patreon support as well. Thank you to myev.com for helping me out making this show. It's coming up to the almost a year since we first heard from the gang at MyEV. 30th of June last year, we featured them on the show as they launched in beta, a marketplace for buying and selling only electric vehicles in the US. Wow, that year is rolling around quick. Hello to new Patreon supporters as well. Firstly on Patreon, simply Nathan. Haven't got your surname, Nathan. If you want me to read it out, let me know. It just came through on Patreon as Nathan. And a new producer, Philip Stone. Hello, Philip. Thank you very much. And a new producer, Dr. Frank Kearney. Thank you, Frank. Dr. Frank. We'll kick off with some Volkswagen news. And of course, we talk a lot about their Volkswagen ID3, the first electric car, full electric car, really, of the new era of VW. Of course, there's been things like the e-Golf, but the eighth generation of the best-selling Volkswagen Golf is going to be a form of electric vehicle. A very mild hybrid, a 48-volt mild hybrid system. In 2018, Volkswagen announced at Vienna, the group is delivering on its promise and bringing the technology into series production now with the 8th generation Golf. You know it's going to be a massive seller as people who are kind of behind the curve, behind you and I, in terms of EVs. They're still going to be buying an ICE car in 2019-2020. Well, the Golf is going to be a big seller. So how much electrification is going to be inside it? Well, a 48-volt hybrid system on their diesel, on their petrol cars, says Green Car Reports, compared to the current cars they're making, which are plug-in hybrids, like the plug-in hybrid Golf GTE and the Passat GTE. What we call mild hybrids have a lower voltage system. So if you look inside an EV under the, I don't know, maybe the bonnet or somewhere, you might see some bright orange cables. Well, that is all the high voltage systems, and to work on those you have to have more training, extra training, there's more risk involved. 48 volt mild hybrid is not any cheaper to do, but then you haven't got to have all that high voltage stuff in the car as well. It doesn't offer as much in terms of functionality, but it is more cost effective. While the plug-in systems, of course, charge the battery via the plug socket, mild hybrids don't have a plug socket, and they can not be recharged at the plug, but some of those systems do make use of things like regen braking. What we do have an issue with on this podcast is when those are described as self-charging, because you can't charge the car, the battery, without putting fossil fuels in the car. So if you ever see that phrase, please ignore it. It's not technically true. They would argue to the end of the world. Those that are using, I think there's three manufacturers, I think I've seen four manufacturers now using the phrase self-charging hybrid. I think it is dishonest, and although those manufacturers using it are in no means trying to mislead their buyers. I think they're just doing it for marketing purposes. I think when people fully understand, I've had people say to me, oh, wow, there's this technology now. They self-charge the cars. And I go, well, yeah, but you still have to put petrol in them, right? And there's no way of you charging it. And some people go, yeah, that's what I thought. And then other people go, right, well, that's not what I thought self-charging meant. So I think there's some confusion around that. I hate the phrase personally, as regular listeners of the podcast may well have worked out by now. Moving on to Tesla, Inside EVs says that our Twitter friends at The Tesla Show, if you follow them on Twitter, they're at The Tesla Show, uncovered the first bit of real, solid, hard information on the new Tesla car insurance program. It's a leaked bit of code, and I'm glad they grabbed it because the code has now vanished thanks to the quick work of The Tesla Show. They got the information, and the news about Tesla insurance is going to be a huge addition for the automaker. Other people disagree, though, as the insurance business is a tricky one to conquer. pretty cutthroat, pretty fierce. Regardless, Tesla is happy to go into those kind of markets. I mean, who would start a car company and try and make it work? Tesla is pushing forward with it, and there's now concrete proof. Inside the code, it said this: introducing Tesla Insurance. Select Tesla Insurance for low rates and one seamless experience. Match your existing coverage or select a new plan with an instant quote. Not sure where this code was found. Maybe you do it from within inside your car. Maybe get inside the car and buy some car insurance on the big screen. Who knows? But I'll put a link to Inside EVs if you want to read more. The comment section is really interesting. Kind of split between people saying that Tesla shouldn't be doing these kind of things. They shouldn't be doing power walls, power packs, solar, insurance. Even some people saying they shouldn't be doing roadsters and trucks. They should make fewer cars more efficiently and make more money, make profit even. And other people going, but this is what they've always done. This is exactly, they've always expanded rapidly and moved into growth areas, invested a ton of money. Okay, so if they were counting every penny, wouldn't be the way to do it, but it's the way that they've been a success. So you can't change now, as it were, a winning formula. So I don't know where you stand on that issue. Maybe drop me a line and let me know what you think about that. You can email me anytime. hello@evnewsdaily.com. If you're a Patreon supporter, by the way, and even if you're not a Patreon supporter yet, you can, of course, contact me through the Patreon platform. I get those come through as direct messages, and they sit within that platform. So I do try and check that all the time for messages as well. Are you a Bolt owner? Would you like to buy a Chevy Bolt? What about a new crossover that's built on the same platform? Alongside the Bolt, the new electric crossover from GM, said to be rumoured to be called the Bolt EUV. A trademark was dug up by GM Authority recently. It's almost certainly what we've seen in some new spy shots caught by the Autoblog spy photographers. Autoblog say it definitely looks more like the legitimate crossover than the Bolt styling, which Chevy also calls a crossover, and maybe you'd argue there is it really a crossover, but it's a more upright stance, it's a different shape. Hard to tell what the thing looks like because there's really thick cladding and camouflage, not like that skin-tight wrap camouflage which you see sometime. This is big foam sort of big pads bolted on, so you really can't see what the car looks like without the cladding. We expect it to be larger than the current Bolt, but it's hard to tell by how much until that camo does come off. We can see there's no exhaust. The video that they've got on Autoblog shows it's running silently, so we know it's an electric car. No official word yet on this car. It's simply spy shots based on intel and the timeline from GM. We could well see the production of this car next year. Late next year, actually, if I'm being more specific. Talking about the Bolt, I wonder where this car stands on a trademark, because Usain Bolt, the world's fastest human, has put his name, he's backing an electric car startup. Now, they're based in Florida, they're called Bolt Mobility, and in the past week, the company unveiled its first car. It's called the B-Nano. And actually, if you're into your cars, you'll know there's also a Tata Nano. So there's two names there, which I'm not sure are going to get too far without some sort of court case, but you know, someone saying, you either can't do that or you owe us some money for the name. Bolt used by Chevy, Tata using the word Nano, but we'll see. It looks like a Renault Twizy inside. Yeah, this is not a big car. Very small, very simple car. Used much like a two-wheeled vehicle in a bike sharing scheme. Short trips of 2 to 15 miles are what this car is designed to do. No maximum range announced. No top speed specified. But the battery is engineered to be swapped out for fresh batteries quickly and easily. Who's going to do that? No answers. Where's it going to be done? No answers. What's known, though, is the Bolt Nano is going to sell for $10,000. Reservations are being accepted now for $1,000 if you fancy putting your money into that. There are many car companies that start up. Some of them make a success of it. Some of them disappear without a trace. And some of them make a really big splash and get lots of funding because of it. I'm looking at you, Rivian, and that's probably an unpopular thing to say. Rivian, right, had some more shots out over the weekend, which got a ton of press, because basically they put a tent on the back of their car, of the truck, the R1T. They put a tent on the back, and then like every publication published it. Everyone went mad for this. I'm like, oh my goodness, look what they've done. And I think I hold a pretty kind of not necessarily widely held view. I support like all car manufacturers that want to make EVs is great. But the world's gone loopy over Rivian. The world's gone really gaga over what is at best a proof of concept. At the moment, they've made a couple of cars. They've put them at auto shows. They put a rope around them so you can't get close, which tells me they've only got a couple of them. But they get so much press. And as you know, they're getting hundreds of millions of dollars of funding from the likes of Amazon. So whatever they're doing is clearly working. And those people don't invest without there being clearly something there in the company. Either great tech, great IP, great software, great battery technology. They must have something. It can't be vaporware. But still, they haven't got much for how loopy people go about Rivian. So we'll see how Bolt Nano goes. And we'll see what the purpose of that is. Right, let's go on to our question of the week. I love this bit of the show because this is all about you. It's about you answering this week's question of the week. And I was purposefully being a little bit naughty by asking this week, what's more important, hardware or software? And of course the answer is both. Of course the answer is you can't really do one well without the other if you're going to have a great product, much like Apple control the ecosystem of their software. Lots of people don't like that. Lots of people choose Android because it's more open, because you know, you can get to the file system. I suppose Apple's making some strides in that. But do you know what I mean? It's like there's different ways you can do it. Arguably, I've been with Apple since, not the first iPhone. I think maybe like the third release. And then, you know, like never looked back. And there's lots of stuff that I know I can't do. But I appreciate the way the hardware and the software is designed by the same company. Rather than, you know, I bought an Android phone a couple of years ago. I thought, let's give this a go. Didn't get rid of my Apple phone. And you know what? I'm just like stuck in my ways. And just put it back on eBay and sold it. Like, okay, so I tried it. I was being open-minded. Let's do it a different way. Much like car makers, if they're not making their own software, they're buying stuff in. Pros and cons to both ways. But I was being naughty and saying, what's more important? David Allen. Hello, David. David Allen said, if I must make a decision, it's imperative hardware is right at the outset. Once the car is in the field, it gets very expensive to fix, replace, or upgrade hardware. Software, thanks to over-the-air updates, can be fixed and features can be added, but only to the limits of the hardware. Hello to Rich Fowler. Says, hardware, specifically seats. Software can't fix a terrible seat. My analogy is that if you play cards, the hardware is the deck, the software's the rules. If the deck is missing half the cards, you can't play a lot of games that you want to play. You have to invent some other game with a different set of rules. The new game may or may not be more fun, but it's not the game you were looking for when you bought the deck in the first place. John Frueth says, since you are forcing us to choose, and I did, no sitting on the fence, between hardware and software being more important, I'm coming down on the side of hardware, says John. Why? Because hardware is the necessary basis and foundation for software. Without hardware to run on, the software is useless. However, the reverse is not true. Hardware is definitely useful without software, as we can compensate for the lack of software with our brainware. So while the software is nice, hardware is the must. However, a combination of hardware and software is where it gives us our biggest bang for our transportation buck. I know that. I was making you choose. Hello, Ron. Ron Kerensky says, I think the right answer for where we are in the EV market evolution is hardware. Assuming a starting point of comparable software capabilities, the right hardware in a car rolling off the line today means the software improvements over the next 5 to 10 years can reach backwards to owners. Nothing builds brand loyalty like not being left behind and improving the resale value of my trade-in because of a high demand used market. Will Adams, my friend Will, who says, since you aren't allowing the correct answer, yes, it has to be software that's more important, says Will. Great software can make bad hardware work, but really bad software can make even the best hardware unusable. You can't argue with that logic, can you? Howard Smith says, hardware is the most important to get right in an EV. Hardware reliability provides value because the car will last longer. EV owners have to pay more upfront for their cars. They need to be durable over the long run. Software's easily updated, but hardware's not. David Nye says, this is a very easy one to answer. No sitting on the fence. Hardware is king. Software finessing and polishing can follow later. Tesla is, of course, the classic example. Early release software in Teslas has at times had its issues, says David. That's an understatement. I mean, look, the first Model 3s couldn't get the radio. I continue. And of course it's critics, but it keeps getting better and better, says David. The Tesla you drive today will only be better in a year's time. Imagine if you had to keep visiting the service center for more hardware. Rob Crawford says, if your EV has full self-driving, then hardware is more important, simply because it's the hardware that allows the car to drive in full self-driving mode. Without the hardware, full self-driving just isn't possible. And the hardware must be strong, rugged, dependable to function perfectly. Imitating what a driver can do, but only better. Now, I can answer the same question about the importance of software, says Rob. Software plays an important part when it comes to full self-driving. Without over-the-air updates, the self-driving will lag and it won't run correctly. So my answer is both hardware and software. I told you, Rob! No, sitting on the fence. Yellow card for you. Right, hello, Tony. Tony Goodwin says, after a lot of thought on balance, it's the hardware, particularly in the fitment of sensors and the processing power, allowing for additional functionality. It's more important than software. Yeah, but Tony, what about Tesla's new full self-driving computer? It's hardware, and they're putting that in all the cars that are on the road at the moment that bought full self-driving. So it can be done. Anyway, back to Tony's email. Hardware changes post-delivery are difficult and expensive to fit and always require a dealer visit. Well, yeah, I do agree with that. Whereas software can add capabilities to existing hardware as techniques are refined and AI iterates. It's also possible to do it over the air and are being carried out at dealerships too. Victor Wood says, hardware is the most important one to get right. Software can always be updated easily, whereas hardware is not something that can be easily and cheaply swapped out. The cost of looking at an autopilot swap out must be sky high compared to the cost of the software. For cars like mine, where there is no over-the-air update, it's still cheap to do a software update, as in effect, it's only the time to put the software onto an SD card, put the SD card in the computer. The last two updates for my Ioniq I did myself, says Victor. After getting the software on an SD card from the dealer, it took 15 minutes. Andrew Bechera says, hardware is more important over software because software is cheap and easy to update. Andrew Jacobs, though, takes an alternate view. Software is easily more important because you can have the best hardware in the world and bad software will render it useless. If you have great software and poor hardware, the software is going to improve the hardware limitations. Just look at YouTube videos where people cover cameras to see how well autopilot works. Autopilot mainly uses the front, forward, stereo cameras. Even with the others blocked, it can still work. The software, says Andrew, is the king. Hello, Bill. Well, my friend Bill Pollock says hardware is the most important thing to get right from the start. Hardware is expensive to upgrade and often cannot be done. I do, however, think that hardware should be designed to be swappable if possible. For example, as battery tech improves, we should be able to upgrade with minimal intrusion. By the way, the Tesla Model 3 is not an easy battery swap. The tech has to basically dismantle the interior of the car to get to the fasteners. The S and the X batteries are designed to be replaceable. I hope the Y correct this Model 3 shortfall. That's interesting, actually, Bill. Yeah, I've watched a couple of YouTube videos, you know, like the wrecks and stuff, the flooded cars where they take the battery out of the Model 3. And now you say that, you're right. Yeah, the seats come out, the carpet gets ripped up because it's bolted in from the floor and the bolts go down, where, of course, yes, the Model S was designed to be battery swappable, something that Tesla thought was a great idea, invested money in, time in, and resources, tried it. Nobody wanted to do it. Nobody could get their head around the battery they bought not being in their car. So it never happened. I mean, they built the infrastructure, they opened, they waited, no car drove through the doors. Michael McClure says, this is a no-brainer. Hardware is static, software is not. I drive a 2015 Model S with AP1, which, by the way, stands for Autopilot 1, that I picked up used last year. It's old hardware, but I keep getting over-the-air updates all the time to make it feel new. And finally, Aaron Patel says, it's the hardware. You can't change the number of cells in your battery once it's sitting in your driveway. Autopilot software can be okay today, but then gets incrementally better month after month until it's great. I just reached 1 year in my Model 3, and the day after I picked it up, I got a software update that added automatic wipers, cabin overheat protection, nav on autopilot, Tesla cam, Sentry mode, Atari games, dog mode, and many more. 28,000 miles later, and the car keeps getting better. Yeah, but Aaron, the car can only get better because the hardware is there in the first place. They were building Model 3s with all those cameras, not knowing where autopilot would end up. So you say hardware, but you know, maybe the software is more important. Anyway, we could go round in circles on this. I think, you know, obviously the answer is it has to work hand in hand. And I think that's going to be the way that you see more car makers going. There is a little bit of on sort of online and that I see people having a go at like the German car makers, like the American Detroit kind of traditional car makers, saying, well, look, Tesla is clearly better because it's a Silicon Valley company. They've got software roots. But that does underestimate how big the software departments are of some of the other car makers. Not all, by the way, not all, but some of them have got huge resources in software. Don't underestimate them just yet. The days of pretty naff infotainment systems and kind of car screens and that, I think they're pretty much, those are the dinosaur days now. As we move to an EV world, software comes so far up the list of things that's to get right for an automaker. They're investing more and more money in that. And yeah, over the years I've driven some cars that have had some pretty terrible interfaces and screens or just design. I think those days are gone now. Anyway, thank you so much for everyone answering the question. Shall we set a new one? All right, thanks to myev.com. A brand new question of the week. Keep your comments coming in on email and YouTube. Here is a brand new question. Does the location of production influence your buying decisions and why? If a car is made somewhere halfway around the world, would you rather buy it locally? If you're listing in the US, would you like to buy American? If you're listing in Europe, would you like to buy European? In a global world, doesn't it even matter where the car is made, as long as you can get it serviced? Or does that still get taken into account? If you're listing in the UK, would you like to buy British? Would you buy a Nissan Leaf because they're made here in the UK in Sunderland? And if you're listing in California, would you obviously buy a Tesla because, well, there's so many others of them on the road, they only come from down the road in Fremont? Let me know. Does location of production influence your buying decisions, and why or why not? Email me, hello@evnewsdaily.com. Leave a comment on YouTube or Facebook. Time to say thank you to our Patreon supporters. I'm going to have a slurp of tea, by the way, because I've been talking for 22 minutes without a break. And, well, I came equipped with a tea, but it's probably cold by now. That's okay. Not bad. It's kind of tepid, but it's okay. I don't mind that. A little refresher for the throat before we get into this. It's always, it just blows me away that like one person supports the podcast, let alone 214. Phil Roberts from Electric Futures had a busy few weeks. I know he's got his Model 3 reservation in, his Kia e-Niro as well. And Electric Future getting bigger, made a big acquisition recently in the solar space here in the UK. They did big solar installs commercially. And Brad Crosby. Brad, since the beginning of this year, has been a big supporter of this podcast, and so many things that I do wouldn't be possible without you, Brad. Thank you. Hello to David Allen. Heard from him earlier. David Allen, a partner of the show, OEM Audio of New Zealand and evpower.co.nz. And hello to Paul O'Connor, all partners of the show, and thank you so much. Hello to our exec producers, Alan Robson, Alex Banahini, Alexander Frank, Anders Hove, Harold Gierskalsveen, Ashley Hill, Bjard Fuchstack, Barry Peniston, Bob Muir from Ginger Computers in Dundee, Borislav Borisov, Brent Kingsford, Brian Thompson, yes, him, Brian Weatherall, Cesar Trujillo, Chris Benson, Chris Hopkins, Craig Coles and Craig Rogers. Hello to Damian Davis, Darren Bird, Darren Sant from the Yorkshire EV Club, Dave Jusen, David Barkman, David Finch, David Partington, David Prescott, Dirk Rutsatz and Don McAllister from ScreencastsOnline.com, who is enjoying his new Kona EV. Enrico Stefanchillo, Frederick Rovick, Free Jewel, aka James, George Clargo, Jack Oakley, James Storr, Jason Fan, Jeff Irby, Sherry Allison, Jill Smith, John Bailey, and John, aka Beardy McBeardface from Kent TV's. John Nodell, John Timmis, Juan Gonzalez, Ken Morris, Kevin Merson, Lars Dallager, Lawrence D. Allen, Leo, Lejek Gjil, Louis Hopkin, Luke Cully, Marcel Lohman, Marcel Ward, Marlin Shell, Martin Croft, Matt Piscioni, Matthew Ellis, Matthew Gruby, and Maz Shah. Mia Oppelstrup, Michael Pastroni, Mike Rogers, Mike Winter, Nathan Gore-Brown and Neely Roberts from Sussex EVs. Ohad Aston, Paul Seeger-Smith, Paul Stevenson, Pete Glass, Phil Mouchet, Philippe Calvé, Raj Badwell, Rajiv Narayan, Ralph Jensen, Renee Schneider, Rob Cooling from appledriving.co.uk, Rupert Mitchell, recent guest of the show, Sarah McCann, Sari Kanasodja, Kangasodja, Seiki Payne, Steve John, Stuart Hanna, The Limousine Line in Sydney, Tim Gutteridge, Walter McVane, and Zach Hurst. Right, time for the Indie Bit. There are 474, no, I'm lying, 475 previous shows online for free. A few interviews, mostly news, but hey, it's all about the new ones, right? And I'd love you to share this podcast with somebody or hundreds of people who you think might get some value out of it. I'm here every day making this podcast and charting the progress of electric vehicles. If you know someone who would like to listen as well, can you do me one small favor? Can you share it with them? Whether it's one person that you ping this to on like a WhatsApp or share or something, or whether it's hundreds or thousands of people on a forum or something, I'd really appreciate you sharing it. I know you're super busy, so no worries if not. It's one of those things. I know you're snowed. But for those that do have 5 minutes, oh man, you know, I'm just desperate for this podcast to grow and for more people to drive electric cars. It would mean so much if you could share it or leave a review. If you want to come and say hi on the socials, you can do that by searching EV News Daily, Facebook, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have a wonderful start of a brand new week. I'll catch you tomorrow. And remember, there really is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.